We think it plain also.
Mr. Goodman, may I interrupt you for a second? In the other case, we talked a lot about an intermediate category. I guess you heard the argument. Do you understand the New Mexico Supreme Court to endorse that concept or to treat the subsidiaries in this case as part of the unitary business?
I don't believe that was at all the basis for the decision below. I think the basis for the decision below was the court's conclusion that Woolworth cooperatively and jointly with the subsidiaries was conducting a single unitary business, and it felt for that reason that it could hold the dividends to be apportionable under Mobil.
Then the two states really take a different position, because as I understood the Idaho argument, they would have agreed that the formula would be different in a case such as this.
Well, I think the courts took a different approach. I think the state in our case, if I may characterize their argument from their brief, agrees now that the businesses were not, in fact, part of a single unitary business. So the state will have to make its own argument this afternoon. But they were arguing, at least through the New Mexico Supreme Court level, and even in the briefs they filed in opposition to our jurisdictional statement, that all of the corporate entities here were cooperatively conducting a single unitary business, and I understand that they no longer take that position. One point I'd like to emphasize in connection with the opinion below, there is a statement in the decision of the New Mexico Supreme Court in describing the evidence relied upon by the state to the effect that there was some intercompany flow of goods, a statement which might suggest that there indeed was some functional integration. In fact, the record absolutely refutes that, contradicts that, and that was just a misstatement of fact by the New Mexico Supreme Court. And again, we understand at this point, since we made that point rather emphatically in our brief, that the state agrees with us.
Does the other side concede that that is error?
I believe so. We think it plain under the decisions of this court that if the operations of the foreign subsidiaries had been conducted directly in divisions of Woolworth, rather than in subsidiaries, we think it plain that the operating income of those divisions could not have been apportioned to New Mexico. We think that by putting the operations into subsidiaries ought not to change the result. We think that is the teaching of Mobil. We think in Mobil what you held was where you have admittedly unitary operations generating income that would have been apportionable had they been conducted directly by the parent, then the apportionability of that income can't be avoided by transferring the operations to a subsidiary. Well, we think the converse is equally true. You can't take non-apportionable, non-unitary income and somehow make it unitary or make it apportionable by transferring the operations to a subsidiary. We think that what the court said was that the form of organization doesn't affect the underlying economic realities and cannot affect the apportionability of the income that the parent receives. If I may, I'd like to turn at this point to the Section 78 gross-up issue. It's a technical issue, and it's covered at length in the briefs. I'd just like to make a few basic points about it. Number one, I want to emphasize that unlike the state, our position with respect to the Section 78 gross-up amount is not dependent on your decision with respect to the apportionability of dividends. If you hold the dividends are not apportionable, that automatically resolves the Section 78 gross-up question in our favor. But even if you should hold that some of the dividends may be apportioned, we still have all of our arguments with respect to the Section 78 gross-up amount. And the basic point that we make with respect to the Section 78 gross-up amount is that the taxpayer's federal tax liability is unrelated to its state tax calculation. If the taxpayer receives an apportionable dividend of $100, that's the amount that it gets included in apportionable income, and it's irrelevant for that purpose whether the associated federal tax liability was $5 or $50. In all events, you still include the $100 in apportionable income. But the Section 78 gross-up amount is related only to the computation of the federal tax liability. It has no separate independent existence of its own. And even if coupled with a foreign tax credit, it should reduce the foreign tax liability from $50 down to $5. You still can't increase, as a consequence of that, the amount of apportionable income actually received. Perhaps I can move on at this point to our alternative arguments with respect to factor relief if the court should hold that any of the income is includable in apportionable income. I think the key point to be made here is that New Mexico can only tax income that can be fairly said to be attributable to the activities conducted in New Mexico. And if you include in the apportionable income base any income which is in fact attributable to activities conducted in Germany or in the UK, then you should correlatively reflect the payroll, property, and sales that generated that income. With the Court's permission, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Ms. Bennett.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. Woolworth has not attempted to prove that formulary apportionment as applied by New Mexico results in an attribution of an unreasonable amount of income to New Mexico. Instead, it chooses to rest upon its contention that a reasonable, fair on its face, uniform apportionment formula is per se invalid when it includes dividends from investments representing shares of stock in foreign corporations and held in connection with the business of this taxpayer, and from related gross-up income in apportionable income of this unitary business. The question presented is whether the statute as applied by New Mexico violates the Due Process Clause. Woolworth had choices in New Mexico about how to calculate its income attributable to New Mexico. First, primarily, it could have chosen to separately account for its income earned within New Mexico, purely within the boundaries of that state. It could and did choose to report its income under the unitary apportionment method adopted by the state of New Mexico within the provisions and the boundaries of the Uniform Division of Income for Tax Purposes Act. There are still several alternatives available to this taxpayer. Woolworth chose to report and characterize itself as a nationwide unitary business. Reported its income to New Mexico on that basis. It used the factors of its domestic corporation. I think that Woolworth could have had another alternative in this case. It could have chosen worldwide combination for reporting of its income and calculating the amount attributable to New Mexico.
Was that one of the options on the New Mexico return?
Yes. It is available to a taxpayer who is conducting a worldwide unitary business. It may combine its income. It may then include all the factors of the foreign corporations.
Is that specifically in your statute?
No, it isn't, but it is in the regulations. What the statute says is that business income, the interpretation of a business is, we're dependent to some extent on the characterization by a taxpayer of what its business is. Woolworth reported as a nationwide unitary business. Finally, within the provisions of UDIPA, there is a relief provision. If a taxpayer considers that application of a formula to it results in attribution of an unfair amount of income to New Mexico, it may prove that, and it will get relief. Woolworth chose nationwide. It made no attempt at all to show that it was eligible for any kind of relief. Due process requires two things of a taxing state. It requires that we not overreach and tax a business which is not conducting business within the borders of New Mexico. And it requires that we not attribute too much income to New Mexico from business conducted there. Woolworth has met neither of those two requirements of the Due Process Clause. Instead,
Ms. Bennett, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
About your theory and the theory of the New Mexico Supreme Court. Is it, first of all, was it the New Mexico Supreme Court's theory that these foreign subsidiaries were part of the same unitary business as the American operation?
The New Mexico Supreme Court found, as a statutory matter, that the income, the dividend income, was business income of this unitary business. I believe that it found that the fact that the worldwide business was unitary indicates further that the dividends held, received by this taxpayer from
its
investments,
is that right?
Indicate the business nature of those investments. I think it's really important here to distinguish.
Please, I just want to be sure I understand your answer.
Right.
Your answer is that the New Mexico Supreme Court did consider the worldwide operation as part of one unitary business.
Well, yes, but the business we're taxing here is not that unitary business. I think that what the New Mexico Supreme Court recognized is that if in fact Woolworth is a worldwide unitary business, it's pretty clear that the dividends we're taxing here are business income of the business of the unitary business that we're taxing.
Well,
in the
if they're
state.
Part of one worldwide unitary business, then their theory was somewhat different from the theory of the Idaho Supreme Court. Would you agree with that?
If in fact that's there is yes.
And the Idaho Supreme Court left out the assets and property payroll and so forth from the subsidiaries because it regarded those as not part of the unitary business. Now, why does New Mexico leave out these parts of the denominator from income generated by the same unitary business?
I don't think this question can be answered without looking at the taxpayer that we're taxing. I think that the question here is a precise one. The taxpayer that's reporting to New Mexico is the nationwide unitary business. I think that in this sense, it is not necessary that the foreign corporations that represent the corporations underlying the investments which Woolworth holds be unitary. I think in this case they may be. The question is, when you have a domestic unitary business, and you don't have any indication that there are two businesses being conducted by that business that is reporting its taxes to the taxing state, whether or not we can include dividends as part of the apportionable business income of that business. I think that the fact that Woolworth may include these foreign corporations as part of its unitary business indicates in a factual sense that the investments are held for a business purpose, that they're part of the unitary business in this case, that it's reporting its income to the taxing state.
Well, do you defend all parts of the New Mexico Supreme Court's decision or not?
We support the concept that there may be a unitary
business
here.
Do you support their seeming view that this entire bundle of companies, including the foreign companies, were a unitary business or not?
Yes. The only quarrel I have with the holding by the New Mexico Supreme Court is that is the only question, that is the controlling question in a situation like this. If, in fact, there is a worldwide unitary business and Woolworth considers itself to be a unitary business, it can report that way to New Mexico. It can get factor relief. It includes all the income earned by all the business. It factors and apportions by all the factors relating to that worldwide unitary business. We were stuck with the characterization that New Mexico gave itself, a domestic business. That is the one that's being taxed.
No, but when they made the choice that they made, they operated on the assumption that dividends weren't includable.
Yes. Were included?
So now would you let them change? Would you let them change?
The option was offered to them below. I don't know if they can go back in this particular case and go and change at this point. A taxpayer is presumed to know what the law requires, and in New Mexico, the regulations are very clear that dividends are includable if they're obtained from investments that are acquired for a business purpose.
For a business purpose, like making money?
Making money is one aspect of it.
Is that all you have to do to have a business purpose that would make the dividends includable? How about from the hotel chain?
Well, the hotel chain is a good example. The hotel chain, if we posit that the hotel chain is a separate corporation and Woolworth invests its money...
For a business purpose. They want to make the money. It's a
right.
good...
I think the dividends, in that sense, are includable unless...
So you disagree, with both sides in the previous case...
No, I think that the real test is not what the nature of the corporation underlying the investment is. It's what Woolworth is doing.
Okay.
What is Woolworth doing?
So you do disagree with both sides in the other case.
I think that
they both seem to agree that the hotel chain wouldn't be dividends from the hotel chain unrelated to the mining company would not be includable.
That's not my understanding of Idaho's position. If they said that.
I disagree with it.
I think that you have to look at the taxpayer that's operating and look at that business. Woolworth could have shown that it had two businesses, and one of them was investing for whatever purpose. And that could be a separate business under a particular given state of facts. We don't have that here. We have one integrated business. They have always contended it to be an integrated business, conducting retail stores, making substantial investments. Many of those investments it concedes to be business income. If it's short term, it's business income. It seems to make the distinction on an illogical basis. The length of time that the investments are made and the fact that they're big.
You don't have any doubt about what Idaho's position was, do you, with respect to that point? Lay aside the hypothetical question about the hotel chain or the some other kind of a chain, or a supermarket chain. The asbestos company in Canada, which was in the mining business and reducing the raw material to some finished product, they said was not subject to, was not includable.
I don't agree with that conclusion. I think that the question here is whether or not the investment activities are an integral part of the taxpayer's business. That's been found to be true. It's constitutional to do it that way.
Well, as Justice White put it to you, if it's making money, then New Mexico is going to include it.
Well, if it's making money, to which business? I mean, the business that we're talking about here is an integrated unitary business.
The dividends
business.
Are paid to the parent corporation,
right,
which you are taxing, and that's all you need to get. All it needs to do is earn from its investment.
We may presume that we believe to be true. A taxpayer can show that it's earned in a different business.
What's the New Mexico law that you're... it sounds to me like you are saying if the parent company or the company you're trying to tax is earning income on any investment whatsoever, it's includable.
If it's for a business purpose, if it's related to the business, yes. And making income is one aspect of that.
What contribution does New Mexico make to the total other than the sales and the operations within the borders of the state?
Well, first of all, we don't know what the activities are in the state. We don't have any evidence on what they do in New Mexico. We know they operate at least one store. We know they make $13 million worth of gross receipts in New Mexico in this taxing year. But we do not know the extent of their activities within New Mexico. But when a unitary business is operating nationwide and operates in a taxing state, it is not a question of how much income you actually earned in New Mexico, because it is presumed that all aspects of a unitary business contribute to the production of the total income, and that income can be apportioned on a formulary basis, and New Mexico can tax its fair share by using a reasonable and fair apportionment formula. Now, I don't think that there's anything different necessarily about dividends. Investments are made for business purposes, it's known. They increase the overall assets of a corporation. A corporation with substantial assets is thereby better off, in a better position to make money in every state in which it makes money. It is better able to absorb losses than a corporation without such assets. The holding of intangible assets in many ways benefits a corporation. So the question is not, is it directly related to the taxing state? That's a situs concept.
I suppose it follows, then, that constitutionally every state in the country can do just what New Mexico is doing here.
We believe so. As long as especially here we have a uniform act, which apportions things, we hope, consistently from state to state to state. And each state is taxing only a proportionate share of the amount of value there. For things which have location, we make recognition in the factors. We have a three-factor formula which we think includes most aspects of a unitary business and does indicate fairly what proportion of a total business is earned.
May I ask you a question about that? Assume that our Mexican subsidiary in this case were in fact located in Texas instead of Mexico, but And they contended it was entirely separate operation for separate management, no purchase and so forth. And you concluded to the contrary, that it was part of the American unitary business. Would you have taxed them the same way as you taxed the Mexican company? They paid the same dividends, I assume. Would you have taxed dividends, or would you have pierced the corporate veil and looked through into assets?
We have a unitary business that reported, and they called them that.
Asking what you would have done in that hypothetical.
In that hypothetical, if the taxpayer wanted to recognize it as a corporation?
He filed the return I described. The Texas operation as a separate business, not part of the unitary business. You investigated and disagreed. What would have been the tax consequences?
We would eliminate the intercorporate dividends, include the corporation as part of the unitary business, apportioned by all the factors. We could do the same thing worldwide.
So you would have done something different than you did with respect to the Mexican subsidiary.
We're glad to do it.
That's correct,
if it's a Mexican subsidiary.
I want to be sure. What?
No, I don't think it's correct.
You told me that you would have pierced the corporate veil in the Texas hypothetical.
Well,
but you did not pierce the corporate veil with the Mexican. Okay. Why is there a difference?
The difference is only in the exercise of the state's power. The state of New Mexico does not go out and redefine a taxpayer's unitary business. We accept it. If a taxpayer reported a unitary business and excluded one corporation that it owned, we very seldom challenge that analysis.
It excluded the Mexican subsidiary, which
for the same reason, we would not challenge the exclusion of a United States corporation. It is a matter of the exercise of the state's power.
You just told me you would with respect to the Texas company. You said you were there, pierce the corporate veil. Why don't you pierce the corporate veil here?
We would not enforce it. That is
just a matter of discretion with respect to the taxing authority.
The taxpayer chooses in New Mexico how to report a tax. If the taxpayer wanted to include that, it could. If it wanted to include worldwide, it could. I think probably New Mexico constitutionally has the power to force it to. New Mexico does not choose to exercise that kind of power. We would recognize the Mexican subsidiary as a unitary part of the business in the same manner as we would recognize any domestic corporation as part of the unitary business. We are dependent very much on the taxpayer's characterization.
Do you think you would have had the constitutional power in my Texas example to decline to pierce the corporate veil and just accept to throw the dividends into the pot without looking at the denominator?
If that's how the taxpayer characterizes its business.
No, the taxpayer in each case has characterized the unitary business as not including the subsidiary, which you then find to be part of the unitary business. And I'm saying, can you constitutionally make such a finding with respect to a domestic corporation and then say we'll just look at the income, we won't look at the factors that generate the income?
Yes.
You think you can?
Well, the factors that generated is the whole question here. What factors generated production of dividend income?
Well, by hypothesis, we're talking about a unitary business.
But how do we know that?
You found it.
We found it?
Yes.
We found it based on what? We have to have evidence to show.
Well, on your theory, counsel, the single store in New Mexico might lose $10 million in a given year, but by applying your formula, they might have to pay a tax, notwithstanding the New Mexico's contribution was to help produce a $10 million loss. Is that not so? If the store in Hamburg, Germany, and in Birmingham, England, and a lot of other places made a lot of money.
Well, there's two related concepts that I have to address here.
Well, that's an easy one to answer, isn't
it? Well, the first question is, can we tax... if they can prove by separate accounting that the store in New Mexico operated at a loss, can they defeat the whole purpose of formulary apportionment?
Well, with the autonomous accounting type that's been described here, that wouldn't be difficult. Each one would have its own accounting.
We have a management of each of the stores. The stores do not stand alone. They have a management that makes decisions about how to operate.
Then your answer is they could have a $10 million loss, definitely established by certified public accountants, but still pay a tax on the...
If in fact their evidence showed that the amount of income attributed to the state was an unfair amount, we would make adjustments for that.
I suppose the same might have been true with respect to Vermont taxing Mobil and the assets it had in Vermont. Though I suppose Mobil could have hired some accountant to come up with a conclusion it suffered a loss, but I don't believe under the court's opinion that would have impaired the state of Vermont's power to tax.
Right. And in fact, in Butler Brothers, look at what they did. They showed that the distribution center in California was operating at a loss, and this court recognized correctly that it's a unitary business. All aspects contribute to income. And it's fair to attribute the total income of that business by the factors giving rise to it.
Well, I suppose it'd be the same result, counsel, if on your approach, if the so-called unitary business that you were taxing in this case, namely the domestic unitary business, everybody agreed, and you would agree, had a loss. The entire unitary business, except for the dividends from abroad, the company had a loss. The entire United States was in the red. But then comes the dividends from abroad. You would still say New Mexico is entitled to a tax.
I think we're still indulging in separate accounting here. I think that the fundamental problem in this is that we are throwing out the distinction between dividends earned from investments and the profits of the corporation paying those dividends. They are distinct. The corporation earns money. It may pay any amount of dividends. Those dividends do not have any necessary relation to the amount of profits earned by that corporation. A recipient of dividends is receiving income from its capital investments. It's analogous to many other kinds of income. It is analogous to interest earned from your investment, which is called a loan. It is analogous to rents in some senses.
And so, again, the taxability of income, according to New Mexico, doesn't depend on any kind of an integrated relationship.
Not with the foreign subsidiaries. We're talking about an integrated relationship among all the aspects of the business, doing business within the boundaries of the unitary business. And the unitary business has been described to us as the domestic one. That is the one that's been taxed. We think that this formulary apportionment fairly attributes income based on that.
Would you address yourself, Ms. Bennett, to what is fair and reasonable about New Mexico's treatment of the gross-up income, this fictional figure?
Woolworth argues that it's a per se violation to include gross-up. And I think we got to look at what we did in this case. New Mexico was faced with the problem of how you come up with a number that you call income. What is the income of this business? It's quantification of an abstract concept. And New Mexico decided to solve that problem by adopting the federal terminology, the federal definition. What is income for federal purposes is income for state purposes. We could do it differently.
Well, of course, the federal government allowed credits and New Mexico doesn't. So how does that become a fair procedure for New Mexico?
It's facially fair. It gross-up is included by accident. There are many other amounts which are included by accident. If the due process standard is violated, we can make adjustments. The due process concept is, have we attributed more than a fair and reasonable amount of income to New Mexico? And there's no showing in this case that we have done that. In fact, Woolworth realized $13 million of gross receipts in New Mexico for the taxing year. And what we have done as a result of this formula is attribute $400,000 worth of income to New Mexico, a modest amount considering the activities of the taxpayer in the state. Also, if the taxpayer wanted to, it could prove that was an unfair amount, if it has some indication, some evidence, that it really, that does not fairly reflect income from New Mexico. There are adjustments which can be made. Woolworth completely ignored any of the statutory alternatives available to it, especially in the light of having absolute choices that it could make about different ways to calculate its New Mexico income attributable to New Mexico sources, and chose instead to attack only one aspect of a number which does not indicate outside the whole what the income of this business is. We have, if we subtract, as Woolworth wants us to do, this amount, we have a much lower amount, which has no necessary relation in itself to income earned by this unitary business. There are many amounts included in federal taxable income. Some work to the detriment of a taxpayer, and some work to the benefit of a taxpayer. Accelerated depreciation is an example of something which will dramatically reduce your federal taxable income. And for state purposes, it will reduce the state coffers proportionately and dramatically, and it is an amount which has no constitutional significance. It is an amount which relates to federal taxing policy, which all of these amounts are. What New Mexico has done is determine that the total amount there has some indications of reasonableness. If a taxpayer can show that it's unreasonable in a given case, we will make adjustments for that.
May I ask, Ms. Bennett, you mentioned earlier that you have a Uniform Act. Do all the states with the Uniform Act interpret the gross-up situation the way New Mexico does?
No. There are some which include gross-up. There are some who have, by statute, decided to eliminate that amount.
Does the multi-state tax organization, whatever they call it, do they take a position on gross-ups? They don't think they did in their brief.
I don't think so. I don't know if they haven't.
Well, they filed an amicus brief.
They did not address the gross-up issue.
They didn't.
I don't think it's a question of constitutional significance. Outside the questions under the Due Process Clause are two. The one that relates to this situation is the amount attributable to the taxing state out of proportion to values located there? It's a result-oriented approach. If a taxpayer can show that the result is grotesque, is distorted, it certainly can get apportionment relief. There is no showing here.
Well,
it is a fair amount.
Is it your argument, I want to be sure I understand it, that you don't look at individual components of the return. You look at the end result. And if the end result seems fairly reasonable, the fact that they might have included $1 million of salary to the King of England would be irrelevant if the total figure is...
I don't think I'd go that far with it, but we don't have anything like that.
Well, you have a fairly significant amount in these gross-ups.
But, well, the federal government determined that it was an amount that was reasonably related to values of this particular taxpayer. Remember that it's related.
Well, they did it as an adjustment to calculate the amount of tax credits it should be
which
given.
The taxpayer elected to take this adjustment.
Pardon me?
The taxpayer elected to take this adjustment. Remember the gross-up goes hand-in-hand with receipt of dividends from your foreign corporations.
Well, as I understood it, it was amount that they did not receive, but they're treated as though they had received.
Well,
isn't that correct?
Yes. The federal government deems it to have been received when a taxpayer elects to take as a credit.
Well, did they deem it to be received, or did they merely require that it be reported on the return for the purpose of calculating the correct amount of the tax?
The federal government deems it to have been received. It uses that language, and it calls it income for other purposes under the code.
Well, the multi-state tax brief says Woolworth has raised no substantial federal question by arguing that the inclusion of grossed-up dividends entitles it to relief.
That must be in the earlier brief filed by the multi-state tax commission. I had neglected that in their primary amicus brief. They didn't address the issue, but in their earlier they filed two amicus
briefs. The question was whether they have a position on it.
I'm sorry, I was mistaken.
They have abandoned it. Do they? Have they?
I'm sorry. I was mistaken. They,
the statement Justice White read was from the motion to affirm, supported the motion to affirm, not from the brief they filed after the case.
I was referring to the brief.
So you were dead right the first time.
With regard to the apportionment question, there's no attempt to show that the apportionment results an unreasonable attribution of value. I think that Woolworth's arguments that we must include certain factors is especially unreasonable. When we did make some adjustments in this case, we reflected some of the dividends received here in the sales factor in the denominator. Woolworth had other choices for how to calculate its income tax for income attributable to New Mexico. No facts support its contentions of unfairness in this case, and the facts demonstrate the other, that it is a manifestly fair result. And the changes which it advocates to the apportionment formula are unreasonable changes. It wants to include the factors of the foreign corporations. It is impossible to imagine a reason for inclusion of factors of foreign corporations unless we assume that dividends represent the profits of the corporation paying them. They disclaim that argument. They don't want to argue that dividends are not different from the profits of the corporation paying them. They recognize the distinction between dividends and the profits of the foreign corporation. We must, in order to be consistent in the law, recognize the dividends are earned by the domestic activities of a domestic taxpayer. As a Commerce Clause question, we submit Mobil conclusively disposed of the issue raised here, and that is whether Japan Lines dictates elimination of some of the amounts included here in apportionable business income. The reason is because we're taxing domestic income. We've apportioned domestic income. We've calculated the amount of tax attributable to the state of New Mexico. Woolworth seems to agree that if the apportionment formula calculates an amount of domestic income, the Commerce Clause does not apply. Woolworth attempts to distinguish this case from the Mobil case by revoking its concession that for Commerce Clause purposes, the dividends are attributable to some state within the United States. It's reducing the question to a question of litigation strategy. I think that Mobil's concession was a necessary concession. If a domestic taxpayer has domestic income, obviously some state in the United States must have jurisdiction to tax that income. It is earned by the activities of the domestic Woolworth Corporation.
Is it possible that under this formula, if every state did exactly what New Mexico did, that some of these taxpayers would be paying taxes in more than one state on the same dollar?
I don't think it's possible. The income here is the domestic income of this business. If it's apportioned among the 50 states, if all 50 states had this taxing scheme, there would be an attribution of a reasonable amount, an aliquot share of the whole, to each of the states in which the taxpayer does business. The taxing scheme would result in fairness to the taxpayer in every state in which it did business. And the states are moving towards this kind of uniformity in adjusting their apportionment formula when evidence produced indicates that an unreasonable result has been reached in a case. Thank you.
Very well. Do you have anything further, counsel?
I'll take just a minute of the court's time. I think the essential point I would like to make is that the state's case is totally dependent on corporate form and the choice of corporate form. The state says that the underlying activities were not unitary. That means the income couldn't have been apportioned had it been conducted in divisions. The state says we could have filed a combined report, but of course that would have meant taking into account income unrelated to our unitary business, an antithetical concept to filing a combined report. I think the essential aspect of the case of the state's argument is that since these activities were conducted in subsidiaries, now somehow the dividends paid out of these non-unitary profits are taxable. And the full scope or implications of that argument is reflected by the statement that, yes, the state could have taxed income from an unrelated hotel subsidiary. I think the state needed to give that answer to that question, because this case stands on the same footing with that question. In both cases, the profits would be paid out of the dividends would be paid out of profits earned in totally unrelated activities. And that's the sole question when you come to apportionment. How are the profits earned? We're allocating profits here. And if the profits were earned from unrelated activities, then they needn't be taken into account for purposes of the New Mexico tax calculation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Chicago.